Real Nerds is a proud partner of the Denver Podcast Network. In the shadow of the mountains,
we speak.
Hi, my name is Paul Caroli, and I host a podcast called Changing Denver. It's a monthly show about our city's physical spaces, how we make them, and how they make us. But it's so much more than that. It's the conversations, ideas, and stories that define Denver's perpetual state of flux. Find more from our team at changingdenver.com and join the conversation on Twitter at Changing Denver. Denver's changing. We can help.
Oh, hi, podcast listeners. There's many ways you can listen to the Real Nerds podcast. You can subscribe on iTunes. You can also subscribe on Stitcher Radio. You want to send us a Twitter message? You can do that. It's so easy, at Real Nerds. Like us on Facebook, Real Nerds Podcast. You can visit our website, realnerdspodcast.com, where there'll be a lot of articles for you to not only read, but to listen to our previous shows. You can also call us, 720-6NERDS5. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Hi, this is Georges Genty, and you are listening to Real Nerds Podcast.
Hey everybody, here's an exciting Real Nerds interview that we did at Denver Comic Con 2018. Hope you enjoy it.
Welcome to Real Nerds Podcast, live at Denver Comic Con 2018. I'm Ryan, and I'm with Amelie Howard again. How are you?
Hey Ryan, I'm great. Thank you so much.
You know, first time I met you, I commented, I love your name. I think it's so pretty.
Thank you.
Yes.
I like yours too.
Oh, yeah, mine's like, well, I have a problem with my name because my mom named me after a soap opera called Ryan's Hope.
And
really?
She
said, oh, that's such a great soap opera. It's not like I was named after, like, I don't know. I don't even know any cool Ryans, so.
Right. Mine's after an Egyptian goddess, so I guess I can't complain.
Dope. No, that's pretty awesome.
Right?
Yeah.
You write stories.
I do.
And put them in a thing called a novel.
That's right. Sometimes the words go in there.
Yeah,
other times they go in the trash bin.
How often do they go into the book and how often do they go in the trash bin?
You know, self-editing, the longer you're a writer, self-editing becomes part of a natural part of your process. So I think in the beginning, the first book I wrote had, I think, something like 800 pages. Yeah, that you can't tell that unless you're Stephen King.
Yeah.
So I had to cut like roughly half of it, which I did. So half of it went into the garbage.
You know, I would also say that if I was Stephen King, I'd cut about half of his books out. You know, when I read It.
Don't listen to him, Stephen. I love you.
It goes on for like 50 pages about describing the town. I can't do it.
Like the Tommyknockers?
Yeah.
I still remember like some of the description of that book. Like, this book is humongous.
I know people, my favorite Stephen King novel is actually his novella, Cycle of the Werewolf, because it's very short and very to the point.
Right.
Because he is a great writer.
Yes.
When he's focused.
Yeah. Okay.
And sometimes I think in The Stand and things like that, I just can't do it.
Right.
Can't do it. But we're not talking about him. We're talking about you and how great you are.
Yay!
What are you working on right now? What's the book you're showing at Denver Comic Con?
So my 15th book came out a few weeks ago. I write young adult science fiction and fantasy and also historical romance. So it was a historical romance book. The book that I have here is Dark Goddess, which is the sequel to Alpha Goddess. It's about a reincarnated Indian goddess who has to thwart hell on earth. And the first book was an Indie Next pick. And the second book is about Kali, and she basically wants to destroy the world because she thinks we don't love it enough, and the world would be better off without humans. And then we have our protagonist from the first book fighting to defend humanity.
So why do they believe that humanity doesn't deserve to exist?
Well, she's the goddess of destruction, and
so
she just thinks
because?
That we need to take it back to zero.
And start over.
Yeah.
Without any humans.
Right.
Or just she's going to leave... Some.
No, there's not even going to be like a Noah's Ark like theory.
No.
There's going to be no one.
No one.
Is there still going to be a Twitter? Or are we blowing away Twitter? Or does Twitter stick around but all the people are
Twitter,
gone?
Twitter's like a cockroach. It's going to stay around forever. It's like a dinosaur, right? Oh, wait. They went extinct. Never mind.
So is it writing someone that powerful? How do you tip the scales and help the hero?
Right. So the heroine of the book is an Indian goddess as well. Lakshmi. So that's she's an incarnation of Lakshmi. And Kali is one of the other goddesses. That's the thing I loved about writing about Hindu mythology, just because there were so many different gods and goddesses. And I loved the power of the female. So they actually, they clash in the beginning, but then she gets convinced to help them that humanity isn't all that bad and we aren't going to trash everything and there's some things worth saving. So she does end up fighting to help. And she's also the love interest of the hero in the book from the first one, one of the sidekicks. Well, he's not really a sidekick, but yeah, some sexy times in there.
So how long does it take you to write a book? Is it vary in length, or do you have a pretty set routine?
Yeah, I mean, I think it varies in length. The average for like a middle grade book, which I don't write, but I do have one, is about 60,000 words. Young adult ranges anywhere from 80 to 100. And then historical romance is anywhere from 100 to 120,000 words.
When you write a historical romance, how much research do you have to do? Are you pretty liberal with the historical aspect of it?
So that's a great question, because there's a big distinction between historical fiction and historical romance. Historical romance is a little looser just because it's more of a period based, but I still like to have some of the details be authentic, like dress and customs and, you know, if you're having corsets and certain periods, if you're writing Regency romance versus like Highlander romance, you know, or even Edwardian times, different. And readers who love that genre will call you out if you get it wrong. So,
and I'm going to see if I get right on this one. So I've been asking all the writers, do you have in your office a big board that has like character name and spider webs coming out on how they go, like Sherlock Holmes?
I only do that for people I want to murder, like Deadpool.
Oh, okay. And who do you want to murder then?
I don't know. That's a secret.
Okay.
The Amelie list.
That's just in your office.
Right? I know.
That no one can get into.
It's locked.
So what is your process of writing then? Do you have a beginning and an end, or does the story just come out of you?
I think sometimes it depends. I've had novels where I do have the beginning, the end, you have to figure out the middle. I have others where I have a character that drives it, and others where I have a plot idea, and I'm just like, oh, this would be interesting to write about. But I scribble my stuff in a notebook. Just, here's where I'm going. I keep notes on Word, in a Word document, but I don't have a giant board.
Oh, man.
You know?
One day.
I know, except for the people I want to kill.
Okay, that's okay.
You know, yeah.
Maybe one day.
Right.
Yeah. Maybe one author from, like, the 1800s I'll interview and we'll have that.
I'm so disorganized. Like, how do I even survive?
So are you a bigger fan of e-books, or do you like to actually hold the book and have it have weight?
There is nothing better than smelling a new book, like a creeper, you know? Just holding it over your face and trying not to pass out. I'm kidding. I love ebooks also, just because it's so convenient. My iPad like literally has a few hundred books on it.
Wow.
For traveling, it's just easier. And, you know, I read like two books a night.
Wow.
So, I mean, I'm a fast reader.
How many pages can you read a day then?
A lot.
That's pretty impressive.
Thank you. It's my superpower.
That is a superpower. I can read like one chapter. I'm like, yes.
Right.
And I mean, how else is the big red dog going to get to the end of the book? I have to read it in
parts. Poor Clifford. Come on. It's get him to the end.
So, yeah, I could read a Dr. Seuss book in one day.
That's awesome.
Pretty good.
Very good.
Is it actual speed reading? And how do you speed read?
It's not speed reading. I do read every word. But I did one of those tests I saw on Facebook. And I'm I'm over 700 words a minute, I think was what it said for
me. You can read 700 words a minute?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
That's insane.
Yeah.
That is insane. That is awesome.
Are you like, you're like Data, where you just turn the page, you've read it, you turn the next page?
You're like Data, where you can read one page and turn the next page, it's already read.
I think I haven't been tested for like a photographic memory or anything, but I know I do remember that when I was in college, you know, or even high school, I'd play hard, right? And then at night, I'd wake up at 5 a.m. in the morning, I'd go study, and then I'd do the test, and I'd do really well. It'd just stay. I don't know.
That's
this is
amazing.
Superpower.
What, so you read so many books. What's the last great book you've read?
Oh, my gosh. The last great book I read? Ugh. That's a hard question, because I've been working on editing my stuff mostly. And I read a lot of romance books. I love historical romance. I'm trying to think what's the last good one. I think it was now I got to look at my phone to remember the names, because it's so many. It's a Duke novel by, I don't know. I'll come back to it.
Sure. Not a problem. So you said you self-edit. Do you still have an editor? And do you keep the pages, or
the paragraphs or the sentences that you've edited out just in case that you can put them back in, or is once they're gone, they're gone?
Sometimes if it's a scene that I'm interested in keeping, I will put it in another document and save it. But most times if I cut it, I think the instinct is to take out what doesn't work. So even though I might like it, it actually reads better after I've taken it out. In terms of editors, like, I mean, so in traditional publishing, you have an editor who buys your book. And when they buy your book, they're the ones who do the edits. So there's several pieces to it. You have your primary editor, then you have proofreaders, and you have copy editors that do all the different pieces of the process. If you're indie publishing, you hire an editor to check your work. So
do you hire one?
No,
so they edit it for you. And is that must be one of the most important things about being an author as well, is getting an editor who gets you and doesn't ruin your book, I guess?
Right. I mean, it's different. Just like, you know, editors are people too. So if they have a vision for the book, I think my own personal thing is that I have to trust that they're the expert in what's selling commercially. So if they come back and they have feedback that I need to change X, Y, or Z, I might lean towards changing it. But if I have a disagreement and I don't want to change it, I can argue my position because it's my book in the end of the day. But
and do they say, well, you'll live by the sword or die by the sword? And
I don't think so. No? I think they're pretty, like, you know, reasonable people. As long as you can defend your position as to why you want to keep something in versus taking it out.
And do they have different editors for different types of books?
Yes.
And that's their expertise?
Yeah, I mean, like, you have, like, editors at any of the big houses that might buy science fiction, you know, young adult science fiction, or they might buy romance, or they might buy historical fiction. Yeah. You might have one editor that buys all three. I mean, it just depends.
I saw In the Mouth of Madness, and Charlton Heston is a book editor who sends Sam Neill to an evil place. Are book editors evil people?
I don't think they're evil people. That's such a weird question, because you might as well ask me, are you an evil author? And I would say, yes, I'm Slytherin. Absolutely.
I'm just kidding. That's awesome. So what's next for you then? Are you working on it? Do you always have another book going?
I try to, because in traditional publishing, the timeline is about 12 to 18 months out. So I think you always have to keep selling something so that you have something coming out in a year, year and a half. Indie publishing is a little different because you can do it whenever you want. On my romance side, just because it's a digital publisher, it's Entangled, it comes out, books come out every 4 to 6 months. So that's awesome. So I do have a romance book called The Taming of the Scot. Yes. That's coming out in the fall.
How do you tame snot?
Scot.
Scot? Sorry. I heard people.
What are you hearing? The Taming of the Snot? That sounds like a middle grade book.
I know. That's what I'm like.
If I put sex in that, parents are going to be all kinds of bent out of shape.
So is it a Scot, like the Scottish?
Yes.
Yes. So how do you tame a Scot?
I don't know. You hit him with a tartan?
And does the color matter?
Of what?
Of the tartan.
Well, you know, they're different clans. So, yeah.
So do you tame it with a tartan from another clan, or
I don't know. Maybe you just take the tartan off. I'm sorry. Oh my god, is this like a PG podcast? What's happening, real nerds?
No.
Okay.
I've said way worse things than that. I already said the Taming of the Snot.
I know.
I just gave people horrible visuals.
I know. Now it's like ruined.
Now you have to write that
book. Now it's gonna be like the slime from, like, you know, one of those Nickelodeon shows. Just tons of it.
But maybe he has feelings and he's just misunderstood.
Because he has a perpetually runny nose.
Yeah.
That's so hot.
It is super hot.
It's not.
And you know what? Maybe the...
It's not.
Oh, fist bump. That's awesome. So you write books in series as well.
Yes.
And when you write them in series, how do you get new readers to pick up your new book to come on board and be able to understand it?
You know, that's a great question, because I think, like, when you're publicizing the second book, you have to say that it's a sequel, or it's if it's a third book, it's a third book. And you try to, like, get people to go to your first books. In indie publishing, I've heard it's a little easier because you have direct control over your pricing, so you can price your books at a lower price point to attract people. With traditional publishing, the publishers have all the power, so they may or may not decide to say, hey, let's put a sale on the first book, or, you know. So all you can do is at cons like Denver Comic Con, you can talk about book one.
And so we were watching 50 Shades Freed. And
how was that for you?
It was awful. Anastasia was the editor of a book, and she picked like a cover. And then the next scene, she was in front of the publishing company, and the cover was already in the windowsill, like big blown up. Is that right. How fast they work?
Yeah, no, that's unrealistic.
What?
There's a lot of things that are unrealistic about that.
So you mean your editor isn't the wife of the billionaire who just bought the company and is giving it?
I know, right? And says, hey, blow this up, and it's right there.
That is unbelievable.
You know? Right.
I thought that's how quick it was.
No.
Do you pick the covers? Or
that's how quick it is sometimes, Ryan. Oh. Not all the
gotcha.
Time. Gotcha. You feel a little hot?
Yes, very. Do you help pick the covers, or do they just set you up with the arts, like, this is what we're going with?
So for my YA books, I get input, so I can say I like this cover, I want this angle, or I like these color schemes. They pick the cover. And they pick it based on what bookstores want. So Barnes & Noble can actually turn around and say, we hate this cover, change it.
Wow.
That's how much, they have a lot of power. But for authors, you don't really get any say. If they put a rock on the cover and call the book The Rock, I have to live with that.
So, but in your book, though, when you deal with the Hindu and stuff,
yeah,
it's important to have something that is related, correct?
I was very lucky with Sky Pony in that they put a brown person on the cover, and it's wonderful because, you know, when that book came out in 2014, there weren't really many books with, you know, people of color on the cover. So it was fantastic. And she had, like, you know, Hannah and stuff, and that was awesome.
Do you think that's bizarre? Like, you just said 2014, and there's not a lot of covers of people of color. To me, that's weird. Like, that it's taking people so long to think that it's okay to do that. I don't know.
I mean, like, diversity in fiction and stuff, the dialogue, the discourse is shifting. We're talking more about it, which is awesome. I actually have a panel with talking about diverse comic creators today. So I'll be talking with Christopher Priest, who did Black Panther
yeah,
and DMC from Run DMC.
Yeah.
So that'll be awesome. But we are going to talk about how the industry is changing and becoming more inclusive. So, and that's the same with you know, prose publishing as well.
And what is what do you think helps bridge that? Is it because the creators are diverse? And because I like to tend to think that this culture kind of cultivates that stuff. You can correct me if I'm wrong, but, you know, I've never looked at a character that way. As long as they're a well-written character,
yeah,
to me it doesn't matter.
Right.
But as a creator, do you feel a shift, or was it hard for you to sell a book with, I guess, to the non-white readers? Is that a hard thing to do?
Yeah, I think so. A big part of it is, yes, there are more creators on the comic side and on the book side that are becoming published today. I mean, I just had a chat with Jason Lowe, who is one of the co-founders of Lee and Lowe Books, and they're fantastic for publishing diverse fiction. And we were saying that how, you know, they go out, you need the publishers to be buying diverse writers and publishing diverse books. But, like, in 2012, for example, I remember when I went on submission for Alpha Goddess, which is my reincarnated Indian multicultural fantasy, I got back that it was too exotic. And, right? So that's like, oh, wait, what? What does that mean?
Yeah, I was
like,
just
is
ask
it
you,
not
what
commercial? Are people aren't buying that? I mean, we say, what does that mean now in 2018, which is awesome. But when I got that in 2012, I was like, oh, my God, do I not matter? Like, I felt invisible. And I felt, okay, I have to write white characters that are completely mainstream to be successful.
Wow.
So, yeah, I mean, I love that the tides are changing, clearly. I mean, and at cons like these, you see, like, so much diversity, which is awesome, you know. And
that is so, I don't know, I guess because I've never, like, thought that way. As not only a woman, I mean, that has to be a huge hurdle that you've gone over. Because have you experienced that just because of who you are? Where they're, I mean, you just said that it's too exotic, but they looked at you like, maybe not for us,
right,
because of who you are.
And that was a big publisher. It wasn't a small publisher.
Wow. I don't know. Just to me, that's so, I can't even think that way.
Right.
So I don't even know.
But you have to think, like, these people, and I'm not defending them because I think it was a ridiculous response.
Okay.
I think that they are thinking in terms of the bottom line, which is what is going to be commercially viable for our default audience, which is white, cis, het, male, and able-bodied.
Huh. You know, you can feel the tide changing, and you know, with, like, Black Panther the movie,
yeah,
where studios, I think, are looking, like, there's not, I mean, really the only white people in that is Claw, and he's the bad guy. Right. I mean, everybody else is diverse.
Yeah.
And it's the second highest grossing movie of all time.
Right.
I think it says something to the studios, like, you don't have to fall into a trap of
right
what they perceive everybody wants.
Well, and it doesn't have to be like one extreme or the other.
Yeah, I agree.
Just blend it with, you know, a different cast of characters. You don't have to have like one token black person or brown person or gay person in a narrative, because then there's so much shit on top of them to represent. Just have a diverse cast.
Yeah, you know,
period.
I agree 100%. I'll never forget, because I'm a big Spider-Man fan, and Miles Morales became Spider-Man in Ultimate Spider-Man. He's half black, half Hispanic.
Yeah.
And people always would ask me, does it matter? I'm like, it doesn't matter. When you or Donald Glover wanted to be Peter Parker. I said, it doesn't matter when he takes off the mask, what he looks like.
Right.
It's what is his character? What is he on
right.
the inside?
Yep.
If that's who defines somebody, not whatever you're projecting, I guess. And that's...
I know what you mean.
Because, you know, it's you think that we've come so far, but then you hear stories like that, and you're like, oh, 6 years ago,
right?
Still having problems.
But which is why we have to continue the discourse. Like, there's a lot of people who say if we're talking about diversity, it means we're failing. And I don't think that we are failing. I think that it's a discussion that just needs to continue to happen, because conversation needs to be followed by action for change to, you know, be brought about.
I agree. And so what do you think how do you think people get over that? Because
I think consumers who like diverse things need to buy more things. They need to buy more comics and more books and go to more diverse movies. And, you know, I mean, you look at a movie like Slumdog Millionaire, which came out, I don't even know when it came out. I mean, it was made with the tiniest budget imaginable, and it was so successful because it appealed to one of the core things that it doesn't matter what your color of your skin is
exactly.
or your economic status or anything like that. It appealed to, like, you know, this guy who's just trying to find the love of his life.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Through how to be a millionaire, right?
I think you're right, because I think the story like that it's universal.
Right.
It doesn't matter who it is.
Right.
We all have loss. We all have love. And the story just has to be told well,
yep.
like, by authors like you.
Oh, thanks.
And keep it going. And, where can we find you online?
So I'm at Amelie. My website is www.ameliehoward.com. Twitter is at Amelie Howard. Facebook is at Amelie Howard Author. Instagram is at Amelie Howard. I've just said my name like 15 times. Actually, four times.
It's
but
okay.
That's okay.
It's a beautiful right. name.
Thank you.
I love that name.
You need to say it to yourself, like, for magic powers, at least 5 times a day.
Amelie.
It's like unicorn
you know, I just
glitter.
I said Amelie once. I can feel it.
Right? Unicorn
the ground
glitter.
Is like coming up.
Oh.
That is amazing.
Spectacular.
That is amazing. Amelie, thanks for stopping by again.
Thanks, Real Nerds. Love you
Thank
guys.
You. We love you. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to another fantastic interview at Denver Comic Con 2018. We had an amazing time, and we look forward to seeing you again next year.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Real Nerds Podcast. Real Nerds Podcast is a production of Nebulous Visions Multimedia. Thank you to Sparks Mandrill and Plan 9 Studios for our kick-ass theme song. Also, if you're in the Denver area and you're looking for a cool place to see movies, we see them at the Alamo Drafthouse in Littleton and now also in Sloan's Lake. Thank you to Colorado Coins, Cards, and Comics for supplying us with all our comic needs, especially you, Andrew. You know who you are. And a big shout out to James's mom. I'm giving you an electronic hug that you can feel through the airwaves. Thanks for listening, and have a nice day.